Blog Talk Radio.
Chadwick Harvey, and welcome to Faithful Performance Broadcast, where we explore the testimony of the biblical prophets and how they perfectly correlate to the current events of today. I would like to thank you for listening tonight, wherever you may be, and however you may be listening. I really appreciate you joining us tonight. We have a great broadcast tonight for you. I'm very excited about to get to the topic that we're going to cover tonight. It's on Daniel chapter 8, so if you want to go ahead and turn there in the Sword of the Spirit, your Holy Bible. We will be working through Daniel 8 mainly. I would like to start out with a few questions that I would like for us to keep in mind as we work through this chapter in Daniel. Are we about to witness the next great war of the Middle East? When we look at the current events of today, are we about to witness this biblical war that was prophesied 2,500 years ago? Are we about to see that? Who are the specific nations of this biblical battle, and when will it occur? Are we starting to see this battle accumulating to its pinnacle here in the future? And last, who is the first king that Daniel 8 speaks of before the arrival of the Antichrist? Are we starting to see this king come into play? Are we starting to see its fulfillment of him rising to power at the end of the age to fulfill his prophetic calling? So those are the questions that we will explore tonight, we will discover tonight. But before we commence with this, I'd like to get our mindset correct of what Messiah, what Jesus told us, and also the Apostle Paul about watching and staying alert to understand the time that we're living in, just like the sons of Issachar were back in the days of the Torah. You know, they understood the times. And we have a very clear understanding of what Messiah says in the Olivet Discourse. And before we will begin Daniel 8, I'd like to explore this to get our mindset correct, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about what Messiah said about the thief in the night. He's coming as a thief. We hear that all the time with people, even believers, that he's coming as a thief in the night. And I'd like to explore that so we can understand what the scriptures say as far as the thief in the night. Who do they come to? Who does the thief in the night come to as a thief? You know, we will understand that through the biblical prophets and also Paul and Messiah. So if you'd like to turn with me to Matthew 24 and 25, we'd like to go on this first to kind of get our mindset correctly. The Olivet Discourse is Matthew 24, 25, Mark 13, and Luke 21. They're just different accounts by the writers. We will explore a little bit of each so we can have an understanding of what truly Messiah said in his last prophetic warning. I call it the final warning that he gave us. It was the last prophetic sermon that he gave before he was crucified and resurrected into glory. So if you're at Matthew 24, we will first start out in verse 4. It says, "And Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you." So as they gathered on the Temple Mount, the Mount of Olives. As they gathered on the Mount of Olives, the first thing when the disciples asked him when can we understand these things are going to take place? The first thing that he said was, do not be deceived. So we have to beware of the deception that is going to occur at the end of the age, not only in false teachers and sound doctrine, but also in the prophecies that were spoken of in the biblical prophets. And he's telling us we do not need to fall for the deception that is going to occur, even including the prophecies that he spoke to the biblical prophets about. So that's very important to understand. As we move to verse 42, we'll move down towards the end of the chapter in Matthew 24, 42, 43. This is what Jesus said to the disciples and to all of us. Watch, therefore. So we're going to see this a lot where he says, watch. He's telling us to watch. Watch, therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. See, most believers, they take that verse and are like, okay, so we shouldn't know because we're not going to understand the time of our visitation, if you will. But let's continue on this verse and we'll see what he comes back with. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let the house be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready. So Messiah, in Matthew 24 and in Matthew 25, he gives us these three parables back to back about watching. And the first one, he compares it to a thief coming in the middle of the night. And he says, if the master would have known, he would have been ready. He would have understood when the thief was coming. So it's very important to understand that he's telling us to watch, to pay attention, to be the master who is watching for the King of Kings to come. So he's telling us to be ready. As we continue down in verse 45 through 51, he's speaking of the faithful and the wise servant and the evil, foolish servant. So he's comparing these two, and it's very important to understand this is the second parable in a row that he says to watch. And let's read from verse 45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give him food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. He's watching. He's watching for his master to come. Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. Now here's this on the evil servant. But if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying in his coming, and begins to beat his fellow servants, to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him, and at an hour that he is not aware of, and will cut him into two and point his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So Jesus, in his own words, he's telling us to watch. He's telling us to be those good servants, those wise servants, the ones who are watching, and who's taking care of the kingdom on earth, who are planting the seeds, who are being the fishermen, if you will, to plant those seeds for the kingdom of God, so that when he's coming, we will be ready, and hopefully all of our friends and family will as well. And then he compares it to the evil servant, and it's a very dark commentary, if you will, of what he says. He says there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth because they're hypocrites, because they weren't watching. And this is talking about believers. This is not talking about believers and unbelievers. This is talking about believers who are watching, believers who are not watching, just like the first parable was. So it's very important to understand that he's telling us to watch, to pay attention, or there's dire consequences ahead for those who don't. Okay, let's continue to Matthew 25, 1 through 13. Most believers are familiar with this, the wise and foolish virgins. Again, this is the third parable that he's telling us to watch. He's comparing the wise believers to the foolish believers, you know, in Messiah. So we'll pick it up in verse 13, verse 1, and we'll go through 13 in Matthew 25. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now, 5 of them were wise and 5 of them were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom, which is Messiah, was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. So it's important that all 10 of them were sleeping, okay, at this point in time, that while the bridegroom was delayed, okay, waiting for him to come, all 10 were asleep. 5 were foolish, 5 were wise. And then in verse 6, it says, and at midnight, a cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming, Messiah is coming, go out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, no, lest there should be enough for us and you, but rather go to those who sell and buy for yourselves. And while the foolish went to buy, the bridegroom came, Messiah came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, the wedding of the Messiah, and the door was shut. Verse 11, afterward the other virgins came also, saying, Lord, Lord, the foolish virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But Messiah answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch, therefore. Here you go again. Verse 13, as he closes this parable, he says, watch, therefore, for you neither know the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. So he is telling us in three parables in a row in his last prophetic sermon to watch, to pay attention, to be alert, to understand the times that we're living in. He's very clear with that. Now let's get into the thief in the night commentaries. If you have your scripture, let's go to Revelation 3, and we'll go to Revelation 16 as well, but let's start at Revelation 3. And we're going to tie all this in together to understand the importance of watching and paying attention to the times that we're living in. Revelation 3, it says this. It says, I know your works, that you have a name that you are alive, but you are dead. Be watchful. There you go again. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die, for I have not found your works perfect before God. Remember, therefore, how you have received and heard. Hold fast and repent. And here we go again. Therefore, if you will not watch, if you will not pay attention, if you will not understand the times, I will come upon you as a thief, and you will not know what hour I come upon you. So who is he talking to? He's talking to the dead church. He's talking to the church at Sardis, the dead church. They were dead. They weren't watching. And he says, I'm going to come upon you, dead church, because you're not watching. I'm going to come upon you as a thief in the night. Okay, in Revelation 16:15, I'll just read this real quick. It says, behold, I'm coming as a thief. Blessed is he who watches. There you go again, watches. The ones who are watching are the ones who are going to be blessed and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and see his shame. You can also see the thief in the night in 2 Peter 3:10 as well. And then our final scripture of this, final two scriptures, we'll go to 1 Thessalonians 5. So if you have your Bible with you, we'll go to 1 Thessalonians 5, and this will tie it all in of who he's exactly coming as a thief in the night to, because from what we've just read, he's coming to the people who are not watching, who are not paying attention, who are not sober, etc. So it's very important to understand who he's speaking to. The Thessalonian church in 1 Thessalonians, they were the faithful church, okay? They were the faithful church. They were watching, and this is what we're about to read in 1 Thessalonians 5. 1-5, it says this, but concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. He said, hey, Thessalonians, hey, watchful, faithful church, you know that the Lord's coming as a thief in the night, for when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. And then verse 4 ties all this in together, brethren. But you, brethren, are not in darkness. He's talking to the Thessalonians, the faithful church. But you, Thessalonians, you watchful, faithful church, you are not in darkness, that this day should overtake you as a thief. You are all sons of light and sons of day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. So it's very important to understand that Paul is telling us that the Lord will come as a thief in the night for those who are not watching, for those who are not paying attention, just like the scripture says. He's not coming as a thief in the night to the believers who are faithful, who are watchful, who are praying about all of these things and about all the things that he gives us to pray about. So it's very important to understand. I wanted to get our mindset where it needs to be in the days that we're living in. And as we proceed to open up Daniel 8 and understand the next great war and all of the other things that we're going to discuss, it's very important to understand that we should be watching, we should be praying, we should be interceding in all of the things that he asked us to do. And last but not least, I want to have one more verse to tie in this that's very sober. It's Luke 19. So if you want to turn to Luke 19 with me in verse 41 through 44, okay, this is very, it lets us know that we are able to watch, that we're able to understand the time of our visitation. If you turn with me to verse 41, it says this, now as he drew near, Messiah, he saw the city and he wept over it. He's weeping over Jerusalem, Jesus is, and he says this, if you had known, even you, especially in your day, the things that make for your peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes. For days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment around you, surround you, and close you in on every side, and level you and your children within you to the ground, and they will not leave one stone upon another. And get this, because you did not understand the time of your visitation. Wow, I mean, that's pretty remarkable. This is very a very dramatic scripture of what happens when people are not watching, people are not understanding the times of their visitation. They're going to be destroyed, just like he said in Luke 19, 41 through 44 with the children of Israel who rejected him. They had the Torah, they had the prophets, they should have known his first coming, and that's why he stated this in Luke 19, 41 through 44. He said, you should have known what was in your peace, for your peace, your shalom, but you didn't. Now here comes destruction, and we should understand the time of our visitation as well. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He does not change. There's no shadow of turning with Yeshua, the Messiah. So if he told the children of Israel that, then we should understand that we should understand the times that we're living in today. So it's very important for us to understand. I know that's very sobering to read this kind of language, this terminology that he used in Luke 19 and also in the Olivet Discourse, but it's part of his word and his will for us to watch, to pay attention, to put his kingdom before ours, to not be dead, not be lukewarm, to understand, you know, the times that we're living in. If you have been following me on the podcast or if you've read my book, you understand where we're going with Daniel 8. There will be other additional information giving on the current updates that we have seen since the book was released. You know, we're going to get into that. But if you haven't kept up with this and this is your first time looking at Daniel 8 or you've read Daniel 8 before and you're wanting more information, I wrote a book called God's Prophetic Timeline, and it goes through a detailed summary of the markers that had to be in place before the rest of these events could occur. Just like when Jesus was born, it began his first coming events. Well, the same thing about his second coming events. There's a marker in place. There is a sign. There's a marker that was going to happen before all of the other end of the age prophecies had to be fulfilled. So we'll go in summary real quick. That will lead us up to Daniel 8 here. So please be patient with me. First, it was the 1948 prophecy, as I called it. Once Israel became a nation again, it opened the door for the rest of the end of the age prophecies to be fulfilled. You know, they had to become a nation again for the second coming events to occur. They had to be a nation again. They had to be back into the land, so to speak, for this to occur. And that fulfilled Isaiah 66:8. So it says, who has heard such a thing? Who has seen such a thing? Has a nation been born at once? You know, things like that. In Isaiah 66:8, it's telling us that's the 1948 prophecy. And once you read on through Isaiah 66:8 through verse 24, it gives you a overall timeline of the 1948 prophecy, and then it speaks of the second coming, and then it goes into the millennial reign, and then even the New Jerusalem. So it's a kind of a timeline, if you will, in summary, of the 1948 prophecy to the second coming. So it gives us these boundaries, these markers, these one from 1948 and one from to the second coming, if you will, then millennial reign, then the New Jerusalem. So once the 1948 prophecy, the foundation prophecy, came to fulfillment, the next prophecy that was open to be fulfilled is them recapturing Jerusalem as their capital, because when they recaptured the Promised Land in 1948, Jerusalem was excluded. Okay, it did not include Jerusalem. But in 1967, they recaptured Jerusalem in the Six-Day War. Okay, and once they did that, we go to Psalms 102, 16 and 18, and it says this, "For when the Lord builds up Jerusalem, Zion, he shall appear in his glory, his second coming. This is written for the generation to come." Generation to come, the word in Hebrew is acharon, which means terminal or last. So basically we can understand this verse, and I'll paraphrase. "For when the Lord builds up Jerusalem, he shall appear at his second coming. This is written for the terminal generation, the last generation." So, and as we know, since 1967, Jerusalem has been built up. You know, the desert is blossoming like a rose, medicine, military, economy, you name it, it's all becoming to be fulfilled just like the Word of God says. So it's very important to understand that those two prophecies being fulfilled, the 1948 prophecy and also the 1967 prophecy, has put us on a timeline for the second coming to arrive. In between the 1967 prophecy and the second coming will be Daniel's four kingdoms. If you're not familiar with the book of Daniel, I'll go through that in summary real quick. Daniel 2, 7, and 8 really talk about kingdoms that will rise to power. especially Daniel 2 and Daniel 7. And the chapter we're working on tonight, Daniel 8, will tell us the transition between the second and third kingdom. So in summary, I'll go through the three kingdoms. The fourth kingdom really doesn't matter for the conversation we're having tonight. You can always listen to the 12-week study that I've done through a podcast at my website, faithfulperformance.com. There's 12 weeks of the book, one for each chapter, that I go through this in very deep detail. So I'll go through it in summary and give you the reference points to reference this, so then we can ease into our subject matter tonight. So in Daniel, he speaks of four kingdoms. And just keep in mind, we're on this timeline. We're on this 1948, 1967, and then we have that marker of the second coming in the future. So we're on this timeline, and Daniel 2 and 7, he sees these four kingdoms that will rise to power. We'll go through the first three tonight, and it will all tie in at the end. But first, Daniel 12:4, it says, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end." This is where a lot of prophecy, not a lot, but some prophecy teachers and Bible scholars forget. They forget that the visions and the dreams of Daniel are for the end of the age, every one of them. Every one of them is for the end of the age, and we'll confirm that here in a few minutes. Make no mistake, the historical references to Daniel's three friends in the fire, Daniel in the lion's den, Nebuchadnezzar, etc., yes, of course, that's all history, but the dreams and the visions that Daniel had is for the time of the end, just like the angel told Daniel to shut up the words and seal it. You know, so if it's sealed, it's sealed. You know, no one can open it. It's sealed. And I believe that he has opened this book for us to understand. And whenever we look at the geopolitical arena of the Middle East, we look at the last couple of decades, we're starting to see some amazing things in the book of Daniel come to fulfillment. So whenever we look at Daniel 2, we'll start with Daniel 2 about the four kingdoms. The four kingdoms that he mentions, and again, before we begin the four kingdoms, in Daniel 2:28, he confirms this is for the end of the age. This whole prophecy, Nebuchadnezzar, if you're not familiar with Daniel 2, it's Nebuchadnezzar's statue dream. It talks about a statue, and it has these four kingdoms in reference to the body part and the metal component, if you will, the gold, the silver, the bronze, and so forth. Okay, but Daniel 2:28, when Nebuchadnezzar asked him, Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar that he's understanding this for the latter days. He said, this is what's going to occur in the latter days, Nebuchadnezzar, in the latter days. And that is an eschatological term for the end of the age, okay, the time of the end, of the age, so to speak. Okay, so that's very important to understand. And then to confirm this, in Daniel 2:44, it says this. It says, in the days of these kings, in the days of these four kings that will rise at the end of the age, that Messiah will come and set up his kingdom for the millennial reign. So we have to understand this, that this is not a historical reference of the Babylonian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Grecian Empire that occurred in Nebuchadnezzar, Cyrus, and Alexander the Great. That's not what he's talking about, because in the days of those kings, Messiah did not come and set up his kingdom, unless we miss something here. So he did not come back 2,500 years ago to set up his kingdom. In fact, when he came as a suffering servant, as we all know, and that's why we're saved in eternity because of it. So it's very important to understand that in the days of those kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Cyrus, and Alexander, which a lot of prophecy teachers put it in that context, Messiah did not come back. So in Daniel 2:44, it strictly says that. So that's telling us that at the end of the age, once Israel became a nation again, once they recaptured Jerusalem, that these four kingdoms were going to come in between that time, 67, and also the second coming. Okay, and we'll get to more of that here in a few minutes. So let's move to, and also, I'm sorry, Daniel 2:38, it tells us who these kingdoms are. And I say this all the time to people. The Lord did not need me or anyone else to figure this out. He didn't need anyone to figure out who these kingdoms were. He had everything in play, and all we have to do is read the literature, read the text, and understand who they're talking about, put it together like a puzzle. He didn't leave it up to anybody in the flesh to understand who these kingdoms are. He told us who they were, and we'll see that tonight. He literally tells us who they were. So in Daniel 2:38, he tells us that Babylon is the first kingdom. So again, we're not guessing, we're not doing anything, we're just reading Daniel 2:38, and he says, He said the Babylonian Empire, which is modern-day Iraq, you can think of that, they would be the first kingdom. And then he says the kingdoms that follow will be in sequence. You know, they will come one after another. We know from history that it's the Medo-Persian Empire, which is Iran, and then the Grecian Empire, which that's really an accurate translation. It's really Yavan, J-A-V-A-N, and that is modern-day Turkey. Okay, so don't think of Athens, Greece. Think of Turkey. That's a kind of a mistranslation, a geographical mistranslation in the scriptures. Okay, it's really Yavan in modern-day Turkey. So we can think of those three empires as Iraq, Iran, and Turkey. It's very important to understand and kind of stay with those with me here. Okay, so he tells us who they are. If we know history, it tells us who they are. But when we get further into Daniel 8, it's going to confirm, again, who these second and third kingdoms are. So, again, we're not having to plug in anything in allegory. We understand the literal references that Daniel has written in his book, and we just plug those in the allegory. That's a huge difference. Now let's move to Daniel 7 before we get into Daniel 8. Daniel 7, he sees four kingdoms again. They're different symbolism. They're speaking of beast instead of metal components. Lion, leopard, and bear. Or I'm sorry, lion, bear, and leopard is the order. And the first Daniel 2 was gold, silver, and bronze. So it's the same kingdoms. They're sister chapters. They go perfectly together. And they're just different symbolism. They're just different visions. They're different dreams, so to speak. And also, Daniel 7 is in sequence. Okay, it is in sequence. It takes you through the four kingdoms that will rise to power. And then there's a scene in heaven that Daniel's caught up into the courts of heaven, and he sees the Almighty render a righteous verdict for the Messiah to come down. And just like Daniel 2:44 says, come down to conquer those four kings all together at once and to set up his kingdom. So it's in sequence. It's not spread out through 2,500 years or anything like that. It's in sequence. It goes perfectly with Daniel 2. It's perfect. Together, they go perfect together, and that's very important to understand. And we always have to remember what Daniel 12:4 says, because a lot of teachers, they do. They put Daniel 7 as a historical prophecy, but also the one that will be fulfilled, the last kingdom will be fulfilled there. They kind of bleed it into the last one, like the first three were fulfilled 2,500 years ago, and then the last kingdom will be fulfilled at the end, which I think is inaccurate. It's incorrect because of what Daniel 12:4 said. This is for the time of the end. These visions and dreams are for the time of the end. And so far, we have the three kingdoms that we'll focus on tonight is Babylon, Iraq, Medo-Persia, Iran, Bronze, which is the Grecian or Yavan or Turkey, is what we can think of with the Grecian Empire. So those are the three that we'll focus on tonight, and we'll see if we're on this timeline from 1948 to 1967. Have we seen the first kingdom come to fruition? Are we seeing the second kingdom? Can we see the third kingdom? Are we seeing these things come to fulfillment in the Middle East? You know, what kingdom are we living in today? You know, that's the question that, do we understand it? Are we watching, as Messiah said? Are we the faithful servants, the wise servants who are watching? The answer is, I personally believe that we are living in the Medo-Persia-Iran kingdom. I think when we look at the timeline that we're on in 1948, 1967, and then these four kingdoms have to rise to power before the second coming, just like we've discussed. We saw Babylon or Iraq fell in 2003, right, when Saddam Hussein was conquered, and he was the superpower. There's not any military leader or world leader in the world that wouldn't say that Saddam Hussein was the power. He was the superpower over there in the Middle East at the time of his collapse. There's not one. Okay, and now what have we seen? What have we seen since Iraq? We have Iran, Medo-Persia, who has come to its prophetic fulfillment. Again, there's not a military commander or a world leader that will not say that Iran is the dominant superpower over there now since Iraq has fallen, just like Daniel 2, Daniel 7 has said. It said it would come. You know, so we are living, in my opinion, in that Medo-Persian-Iranian kingdom. We can see it. We can look at history. We can see Iraq fall. We can see Medo-Persia, Iran, and we'll start seeing it more as we go into Daniel 8 with this. So as we get into Daniel 8, before we get into Daniel 8, let's review some of these questions that we're about to answer here. Are we about to witness the next great war of the Middle East? Is that Daniel 8? Who are the specific nations of this biblical battle, and when will it occur? And who is the first king before the arrival of the Antichrist in Daniel 8? These are the three questions that we will answer here shortly. I hope it comes very obvious. Just like we've just discussed, it's kind of obvious if we go on the timeline from 1948 to 1967. Okay, Messiah said when he builds up Zion, Jerusalem, he's going to appear in his glory. Well, that means that these four kingdoms have to arise sometime. We saw the first kingdom fall in 2003. Now what happened? Now we have Iran, who is the superdog, who's the superpower over there that's spreading across the Middle East, and we'll get into that in Daniel 8. And the point is, are we watching? Are we paying attention to what's going on in the Middle East? So if you're at Daniel 8, Daniel chapter 8, we're going to go through the first part of this and then the interpretation, because we want to stay on point tonight on what we're trying to accomplish to understand where we are, which I've just explained. I believe we're in Medo-Persia, Iranian kingdom, and then what's about to come, you know, what's about to come, the next great war of the Middle East, and then we'll go into the interpretation to confirm what we're discussing tonight. Okay, so if you're in Daniel 8, like I said, we'll read up to verse 7, 1 through 7, and then we'll go into the interpretation, and then we'll go into the modern day events. We'll go into some quotes by some leaders to help all this come to fulfillment in our heads so that we can understand what to expect going forward and what's going on in the geopolitical arena in the Middle East. So we'll read Daniel 8, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, after the one that appeared to me the first time. I saw in the vision, and so it happened while I was looking that I was in Shushan, the citadel, which is in the province of Elam. I saw in the vision that I was by the river Ulai. Then I lifted up my eyes, and I saw, and there standing beside the river was a ram which had two horns, and the two horns were high. But one horn was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward, northward, and southward, so that no animal could withstand me, nor was there any that could deliver me from his hand. That he did according to his will and became great. Okay, we'll stop there. So Daniel has a vision in Elam, which is Iran. So he's in a vision in Iran, and he sees this ram. He sees this symbolic ram with two horns. One was higher than the other. And then he saw him push northward, westward, and southward. That's very important to understand as we correlate it to the modern events of today. He saw him go northward, westward, and southward. He became great. No one could withstand him. He did according to his will, so to speak. So Daniel tells us in Daniel 8:4 what this ram is going to do at the end of the age. Now, who is this ram? Does it coincide with the second kingdom in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7? Okay, let's go to the interpretation so he can tell us who this is in Daniel 8:20. He says, the ram which you saw having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. Okay, Iran. So he tells us literally, we don't have to guess, literally it is Iran. It is Iran. The ram is Iran. And what does Daniel 8:4 says? Daniel 8:4 says, I saw the ram. I saw Iran pushing westward, northward, and southward so that no animal could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver him from his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. So he's telling us at the end of the age, this ram, Iran, is going to rise to power, and it's going to sweep across the Middle East, northward, westward, and southward. Well, now let's look at the current events since 2003. What has occurred? Well, since Iraq fell, the first kingdom, the second kingdom, which is Iran, it's conquered Iraq. They control Iraq. They've gone into Lebanon. They control Hezbollah, which is Lebanon. That's very well documented. They control Hamas, which is the Gaza Strip, and they control Syria. Assad is sitting there because of, which is the president of Syria, he's sitting there because of Iran. Iran has propped him up, okay, or he would be a sitting duck, or he already is, but as we'll see. But Iran has propped him up. So they have formed that Shia Crescent, which is their sect of Islam. They have formed a Shia Crescent from Iraq, from Iran to Iraq to Syria to Lebanon to Gaza Strip, and they've also gone down southward to Yemen. You know, they basically have a lot of control and influence in Yemen as well. So they're doing according to what Daniel 8:4 says. It's very accurate. It's very pinpointed of what Iran is doing, the ram they're doing. They're sweeping across the Middle East just like the prophet said they would at the end of the age, at the end of the age. And to confirm that this vision is for the end of the age, if you'll turn to me with Daniel 8:17 says, an angel came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and I fell on my face. But he said to me, "Understand, son of man, the vision refers to the time of the end." Okay, so he's telling us again, this vision, Daniel 8, the vision, the entire vision is for the end of the age, for the time of the end, before Messiah comes. And then he confirms it again in verse 19, and he said, "Look, I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the end of nation, for at the appointed time the end shall be." So he's telling us three times that this vision is for the end of the age. This vision does not bleed in together from history to now. It's not for history. It's for the end of the age. It's for the time that we're living in. It fits perfectly with the events that are occurring in the Middle East today. Just like we discussed, Iraq fell in 2003, and Iran has accomplished Daniel 8:4. I'm not saying they're finished with that yet, but they're starting to get to their pinnacle, just like Daniel 8:4 says, that no one could withstand the ram, and they did according to his will. I don't know if you've noticed in the past couple of years with the previous administration, they gave them like billions of dollars in cash, $1.5 billion in money. It's ridiculous. They did according to their will, just like Daniel 8:4 says, that they have a lot of money, and they have just absolutely widespread across the Middle East, so to speak, in Yemen, southward, westward to Iraq, westward to Lebanon, Hezbollah, westward to Gaza Strip, you know, Hamas, westward to Syria, you know, westward, northward, so to speak. So they're accomplishing just what Daniel 8:4 says. Okay, so we're right there, in my opinion. I tell people all the time, and some folks laugh, but I tell people to take Daniel 8 and put it on the refrigerator or put it on your mirror in your bathroom, whatever you want to do, because all you have to do is check off the events, and this will lead you towards the Messiah's second coming. Literally, it will lead you towards there, because we're in that Daniel 8:4 area right now. And then now let's continue with Daniel 8:5, and let's see what comes next with this. Daniel 8:5, it says, "And as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Then he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram. He was moved with rage against him, attacked the ram, and broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he cast him down to the ground and trampled him, and there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand." So Daniel is speaking of a war that's going to take place, a tremendous battle that is going to take place between this ram and goat. Okay, there's a tremendous war that's coming between a ram and a goat. We've already identified the ram as Iran. Let's go back to the interpretation in Daniel 8:21 to confirm who the goat is. He says, "And the male goat is the kingdom of Greece." So here we go again. We're seeing the same kingdoms as we saw in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7. They match perfectly. You had Babylon first. You had Medo-Persia second. You had Greece or Yavan or Turkey as third. Okay, so they match perfectly. In sequence, it's perfect. It's a perfect alignment. And it's all for the time of the end. What Daniel 8 is saying is from the second kingdom to the third kingdom, from the second kingdom to the third kingdom, there's going to be a major war. The first kingdom was dethroned by America, as we all know, Iraq. Well, Daniel 8 is telling us the second kingdom to the third kingdom is going to be a war. It's going to be a major war. This is not a cup of coffee at Starbucks. I mean, if you read it again, it says, I saw the goat confronting the ram. He raged at him. He attacked him. He broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he cast him to the ground, trampled him, and there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. So this is a major war, and we'll see it's the next great war of the Middle East as we continue down the path that we're on, the timeline that we're on. So it's very important to understand that what we've done is all we've done is taking the biblical prophet Daniel, taking his literal references to the kingdoms, and we've applied them to the symbolism. That's all we've done. That's all we've done. We haven't guessed. We haven't put in things that weren't supposed to be in there. Daniel 2 says Babylon first, and then Daniel 2:38 says Babylon's first, and then the kingdoms will follow in order. History will show that Medo-Persia and Greece, or Yavan, okay, Turkey, will come next. And then we go to Daniel 7, the same thing in sequence. They're sister chapters. And then Daniel 8, which is the war between the two, the second and third kingdom. So it's very important to understand they all are in sequence. They go perfectly together. And this is where I believe that we are right now. We're right in the middle almost to see the Daniel 8 war occur, which is, in my opinion, the next great war of the Middle East. So now can we see Turkey? Can we see the leader of Turkey, the president of Turkey, rise to power to fulfill his prophetic calling? Can we? Are we witnessing his arrival? First, let me give you a little bit of background with Turkey and their transformation that's occurred in the last two decades. The Ottoman Empire collapsed on July 24th, 1923. That's when the Republic of Turkey came to fruition under Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. It's very important to understand that during that time from 1923 to 2001, they were a republic, they were a democratic sovereignty, and it basically it ended, you know, over hundreds of years of dictatorship from the Ottoman Empire. You know, basically it was officially proclaimed on October 29th, 1923, and the new capital was moved to Ankara. Okay, so now let's fast forward approximately 80 years to 2001 with the founder and the establishment of the AKP party, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. He is the current president of Turkey, and we will start to see how he has basically transformed and revolutionized Turkey from the secular republic that it once was to the old tyrannical Ottoman Empire dictatorship. So to have a quick knowledge about him, most of this stuff is documented through the internet and things like that. So it's very important, I think, to go through the major events that he has done since Iran has come to power, since we're seeing them sweep across the Middle East. Let's see, like I said, there's no political leader or military leader that would not say that Iran is the superpower of the Middle East. So now let's see what the Islamic world, who they call the leader of the Middle East, of the Muslim world, if you will. In 2015, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, which is the president of Turkey at the moment, he was honored in Saudi Arabia at the Kaaba Stone. If you're not familiar with the Kaaba Stone, it is the shrine that people make pilgrimage to, and they circle it all the time. There's pictures on it. It's called the Kaaba Stone, Kaaba Shrine. Well, he was invited and honored to be, I'm not sure what to call it other than baptized, if you will, the Christian's version of baptized. And he was baptized, if you will, by King Salman was in power, and he basically approved the Turkish president to be the leader of the Muslim world. It's a very honor to do that. It's a very sacred thing, if you will, in Islam, and it's only allowed for someone whom they feel is godly. So it's very important to understand to them that is crucial. It's kind of like with the Catholics, with the Pope, so to speak. That would probably be a good way to compare that. It's basically like the Pope. They basically told him he is the leader of the Islamic Middle East, which is very important. So now, 6 months after that, from December 2015 to the summer on July 15th, this is what occurred. There was a coup, a military coup that wanted to, that attempted to remove Erdogan from power. Okay, but however, by the following day, his government, Erdogan's government, they had successfully reasserted itself with effective and total control over the country, over Turkey. During the coup, just FYI, there was more than 300 people killed 179 were civilians, and more than about 2,000 injured. Okay, it was kind of a really quick coup. It didn't turn out to be successful. Many government buildings, which included the Turkish parliament and the presidential palace, were bombed from the air. But there's widespread suspicion that Erdogan staged the event so that he could have complete and total control over Turkey, so he can further escalate his agenda for the country, because there was no government official arrested, which basically raises a false flag, you know, that basically suspicion that it was a false flag. Personally, I believe it was a false flag. I believe it was a setup. I think he staged this so that he can implement his agenda for Turkey and for the surrounding neighbors. In the aftermath of the coup, Erdogan has striven to purge all perceived enemies from all aspects of Turkish society. And this is amazing. If you can really pay attention to these numbers, it's absolutely astounding. Just within a year from the coup, Erdogan's government has arrested, now get this, 123,000 citizens. I mean, think about that. He's fired over 145,000 people, removed nearly 9,000 academics, closed over 2,000 schools, arrested nearly 300 journalists, and shut down an estimated 200 media outlets, and dismissed, get this, approximately 5,000 judges. I mean, this is absolutely incredible, and the media was absolutely silent for the most part. Most part, the lamestream media was absolutely silent with this. It's really unparalleled in the world history what this guy has done after the coup was. But most of the world media who did cover it said it was basically a counter coup of him getting vengeance, and he was kind of getting back at the people who he says did that, which I believe he staged the event. So it's very interesting of what he's done, and without question, it is unparalleled in modern history. So we have this baptism, if you will, of Erdogan as the Islamic Muslim leader. Then we have the Turkey coup. Okay, so you're seeing this timeline starting to evolve with this guy, you know, to rise to power to fulfill his prophetic calling. Then we have the Turkey coup. Okay, that he staged to gain more power. We see him purging all of his enemies out of the way so he can gain full power and control, and we'll get to that here in a minute. And then on 2016, this is very interesting and very prophetic to understand, we get into this Syria. We're going to talk about Syria now, which is going to come to fruition the longer we talk about it, so bear with me. The invasion of Syria. On August 24th, 2016, something very, in my mind, very prophetic, not only historical, but very prophetic, occurred as well. And I want to be clear, I'm not predicting any dates or setting dates or anything like that, but I just think it's very, very interesting of what has occurred. You know, we believe that history repeats itself, and if that's the case, then we should believe that the biblical prophecies and the kingdoms will repeat themselves as well, which they have and they will. Okay, but on August 24th, 1516, it's the historical date, okay, August 24th, 1516, it's the historical date when the Ottoman Empire, which is Turkey, began their dominance and control over the Middle East at the Battle of Dabiq, Syria. Okay, now let's fast forward 500 years later, and let me back up. Once they conquered Dabiq, Syria, and once they won that battle, they became that started the Ottoman Empire, and they ruled over the Middle East for hundreds of years, okay, 400 or 500 years. So that's very important to understand. So, again, the pattern, they conquered Dabiq, Syria, then they ruled over the Middle East for 400 years. Now let's fast forward to August 24th, 2016. In the 500th year anniversary, that's incredible to me. It's right on the button, 500th year anniversary on August 24th, 2016, Turkey invaded Dabiq, Syria with its largest intervention via a land invasion at the Battle of Dabiq. Again, 500 years later to the exact day Erdogan did this. We have to understand that he is a scholar in the Ottoman Empire. He understands the Ottoman Empire. He understands the sultans. That's his. He's possessed with it. He wants that. That is what his goal is to revive the Ottoman/Grecian/Yavan, okay, Turkey Empire, if you will, the Turkish Empire. Okay, and we got to remember as we go forward that Iran is a supporter of President Assad in Syria. So we have to keep going on this timeline that Erdogan has invaded Syria August 24th, 2016. That was on the 500th anniversary of when they fought at Dabiq, and then they became rulers for hundreds of years in the Middle East. He did that on August 24th, 2016. Iran supports Syria, right? They support Syria and Iraq, so keep that in mind as we go forward. That's very important as we continue on. So whenever the Turkish tanks entered into Syrian soil, whenever the land troops went over there, this is what he proclaimed, and this is very important to understand because we all believe that God raises kings and dethrones kings, like Daniel 2, 20 through 21 states. And this is what he puts into the hearts of Pharaoh, Nebuchadnezzar, Cyrus. He puts into their hearts what he wants to get accomplished for his biblical prophecies to be fulfilled. And for his biblical prophecies to be fulfilled, Turkey, Yvan, the Grecian/Ottoman Empire, has to come to power. So get this. This is what Erdogan boldly proclaimed on August 24th, 2016, the 500th year anniversary. Syria is responsible for the terrorism since it refuses to accept our solutions. When we speak of Syria or the Balkans or the Caucasus, they were part of the Ottoman geography from 100 years ago. So he's got his Ottoman Empire cap on. He's thinking of the territory that the Ottomans, that Turkey owned back then. Okay, so he's thinking Syria is theirs, the Balkans is theirs, the Caucasus is theirs. And then he continues, I believe we will overcome all the obstacles in front of us, which will be the will of Allah. Turkey has a massive power and will use it. We are more confident today about our future because since the morning of the Turkey coup, July 15th, we are more powerful. We are now in place that looks more hopeful. And then get this, our commitment is achieving the 2023 target. Now, he said that. I didn't say that. He said his target is 2023. That's his target for the revival of the Ottoman Empire, which includes Syria, the Caucasus, the Balkans, and Iraq. He continues, Turkey will cut off the front foot with the diplomatic games. We will continue to remove those who play their games. And then he finished with this, what I promised in Syria, Iraq, who Iran's in control over, the Balkans and the Caucasus is now within reach. So what we're seeing here is we're seeing a real estate battle of what is going to occur with the next great war. We're seeing a real estate battle of Daniel 8. Erdogan and the Turkish Ottoman/Grecian Empire, Yvan, they want to control Iraq and Syria and other places. Well, right now, Iran controls Iraq and Syria and other places. So we're seeing this real estate battle that's starting to occur with this. So it's very important to understand that. So I believe personally that the next great war is going to involve the real estate that we just mentioned, Syria and also Iraq and other places, but mainly Syria and Iraq is where he's talking about the most with his quotes. That's where we are. Like we've discussed, Iran has swept across the Middle East, and they are in control of Iraq and Syria, Lebanon, Gaza, Yemen, so to speak. And then we're seeing Erdogan coming out with rhetoric, coming out with goals, invading the lands that he wants to be his as far as the Ottoman geography was concerned back in the days. Actually, there's maps that he's starting to redo, so to speak, in Turkey, expanding Turkey's territory to those areas. I mean, it's unbelievable at the pride that this guy has and the deception that he's just delusional, so to speak. But that will occur with the next great war of real estate. That is the battleground, I believe, will cause this to come into fruition, where Daniel 8 says that Turkey, the goat, will rage at Iran, and they will win this war. Turkey, it says Turkey will win this war just like we read. It smashes, it crushes, it tramples the ram and Iran. So they will win this war whenever it comes, whether it's in 2 years, whether it's 2023, 2022, whenever it comes. We can be confident that the prophet Daniel has told us the outcome of this war. What's even more interesting with Turkey and Erdogan is in 2017, there was a referendum in Turkey on April 16th, not even a year ago. There was a a referendum that basically he won. He won this referendum that basically gives him sweeping powers and control over Turkey up until 2029, which is a very interesting date. Anyhow, it gives him sweeping powers. He can do basically what he wants to. He can hire and fire judges. Anything that he wants to do is basically a dictatorship. You can go online. There's a lot of articles about that as well. And what's so interesting about his victory is once he won the victory, he went to the Sultan, the first Ottoman Sultan who invaded the big Syria. Again, he understands how all of this works with the Ottoman Empire. He understands the historical references to it. He appreciates it, and basically he's possessed by it. So he went to the first Ottoman Sultan's Selim I, his grave, to pay homage when he won it, because now he has total control, just like the first Sultan did, which basically indicates his passion and desire for the revived Ottoman Empire. So that's just not by coincidence that he's doing all of these things. I believe that he's rising to his prophetic calling to be that first king, that large horn that's on the goat. I believe that Recep Tayyip Erdogan is that first king, that large horn that Daniel says is on the goat. He is not the Antichrist. I want to make that clear. He is not the Antichrist, because a first king has to rise first to lift the Grecian, the Ottoman, Turkey up. They have to lift it up to power. And then, as we read in Daniel 8, he will die. In this case, Erdogan will die. And then it will split into four regions. And then the Antichrist will rise out of the Seleucid division of that, kind of like Alexander the Great. So when you keep reading in Daniel 8, it tells you the stuff that I'm telling you, that once Turkey becomes great, the goat becomes great, the large horn will be broken off, the first king, and then it will be divided into four regions, and then the Antichrist will come after that at the appointed time, whenever that is. So that's very important to understand. So there we are. Daniel 8 will carry you, like I said, to the Antichrist and further on. We're just covering the second and the third kingdom in tonight's broadcast, but it's very important to understand the full roadmap, if you will, that leads you basically to the second coming. A Turkish newspaper, once he won on August 16, 2017, a Turkish newspaper stated this, that Erdogan has unveiled the Sultan of Selim I, okay, the diadem, and it is known as the caliphate. So again, Erdogan wants to be the caliphate. He wants to be the caliph of the caliphate. He wants to be that first king that rises it to power. And so far he is fulfilling, he is on his way to fulfill that. So it's very important to understand. Also in July of 2017, to make it even more apparent that what he's trying to do, you can go online to look at this, but he created this huge image, towering image of an Ottoman crescent star, and it basically had all the thousands of people out there. It was a big show, so to speak, with the media, and basically it signifies that the Ottomans' unification of the region, so to speak. So again, it's one of those proclamations that really no one is paying attention to about what this guy is about to do. Okay, so it's very important. Actually, you can go online and there's a picture of it. And then he even has his soldiers dressed up in the ancient Ottoman Empire costumes, if you will. It looks like a Halloween party, but it's not Halloween over there. So it's just interesting to understand that he's possessed with this. He's got a goal. He's got a desire to reach the Ottoman Empire to the way it was, the revived Ottoman, Grecian, Turkish Empire, if you will. I'll read a few of the quotes that occurred with this. Once he did this in April 16, 2017, there was a lot of reporters and a lot of media that basically was all about this, and they were like, this is the day of great transformation. A new history has begun. We're about to identify with our past. We are waking up from the dead to existence, you know, basically the revival of the Ottoman Empire. One reporter says, we are rising. We are being born again, revived. This is our final screen. That's very interesting. This is our final screen. This is the last screen, if you will. And today the nation will scream for the last time. We are born again as a nation. I mean, all of these things, once he won the referendum, all these reporters thought that the Ottoman Empire was revived again. It's just a matter of time, the Turkish Empire. It's just a matter of time before they conquer this land area that we're talking about in Iraq and Syria. So it's very important to understand. Now, let's go to, we'll bring it on in before we bring it home to the end of 2017, early 2018. Before I do that, I'd like to go back in history to the Arab Spring in 2011. And it's very important. Erdogan has never wanted Assad to stay in Syria because, again, he's looking at that as his territory. So whenever the Arab Spring began in 2011 and through 2014 with Egypt falling, with Tunisia, with Libya, you know, all these countries started to fall, the revolution began. This is what Erdogan said about Assad, and this is November 11th, 2011. He said this: just remove yourself from that seat before shedding more blood, before turning more, and for the welfare of your country, as well as the region. So he's telling him, he's wanting him to step down. He's been wanting him to step down since that time because his eyes are on that region. Now let's fast forward this to a month ago, December 28, 2017. This is what has occurred. This is his quotes that Erdogan made about Assad. Assad is definitely a terrorist, and Assad is the Syrian president, if you're not familiar with that. This is what he said about him. Assad is definitely a terrorist who has carried out state terrorism. Okay, he told someone in Tunisia that. And then he continued, it is impossible to continue with Assad. How can we embrace future with a Syrian president who has killed close to a million of his citizens? Okay, and so it's very harsh stuff, but that's the truth. And then he continued, we can't say Assad will handle this. It is impossible for Turkey to accept this. Northern Syria has been handed over as a terrorist corridor. There's no peace in Syria, and the peace won't come with Assad. I mean, this is very harsh language and very telling language of what he's doing. Okay, and remember, he invaded Syria, Dabiq, in August 24th, 2016. So it's very important, this rhetoric and action that he's doing against this. And in fact, American Secretary of State Tillerson, Rex Tillerson, he said this as well. And this is very important because the United States are a NATO ally with Turkey. So they might have a little bit of disagreements now, but I think eventually you're going to see the U.S. come in alliance with Turkey. And Mr. Tillerson's statements here says exactly that. On October 21st, 2017, says there's no role for Assad in Syria's future. Okay, and then he goes on, it is our view, and I have said this many times as well, as that we do not believe there is a future for the Assad regime and Assad family. The reign of the Assad family is coming to an end. The only issue here is how it should be brought about. That's very interesting. So that's very telling what we have with not only Turkey and Erdogan speaking about changing leadership in Syria, also the United States, America. As we know, America has been involved with most of these revolutions in the Arab Spring, in Libya, in Egypt, in Tunisia, Sudan. They've been down there. And also we've been involved in the Syrian conflict as well. We've been involved in Iraq. So we have to understand America will have its part in there. That's not saying anything other than that. We will have our part in that. And I believe that we will take the side of Turkey because the biblical prophets will be fulfilled, and the Syria-Iraq area will be the battleground of the next great war in the Middle East. I personally believe, since we're on this timeline that we're on, okay, 1948, 1967, Daniel's four kingdoms, we've seen Iraq fall. We're seeing Iran, just like Daniel 8:4 says, it's sweeping across the Middle East, northward, westward, and southward. It's into Iraq. It's into Syria. It's into Lebanon. It's into Gaza. It's into Yemen. Now we're seeing, or we're going to start to see, we have seen the GOAT come to fruition. And a matter of fact, this year, January 20th in 2018, not only have they invaded the big Syria, they've also invaded Syria, the northwestern Syria as well. And one of the largest campaigns there is actually, it's kind of interesting, it's called Operation Olive Branch. Okay, I thought that was very interesting, but it's a very massive campaign. This only started a week ago. A week ago this has started. You can go on the internet, you can read a lot about this, but we're about to see this to gear up. You're about to see Turkey blame it on terrorism, but ultimately they want to control Syria. He's going to blame it on the terrorist corridor. He's going to blame it on protecting their borders. Ultimately, it's going to lead to Turkey and Iran fighting over that piece of coveted territory, not only in Syria, but also in Iraq and maybe other places. So it's very important to understand and watch what we're dealing with here. I believe we're seeing some amazing things that are occurring in the Middle East and North Africa today. We're seeing Daniel 8 come to its fulfillment, which fulfills Daniel 2 and Daniel 7, okay, because we're on these three kingdoms that come into play, and we've seen Iraq fall, we're in Iran, and we're going to see Turkey, Yavan, Grecian battle over the land for the next great war in the Middle East to come to their prophetic fulfillment of the third kingdom, and then it's off to the races with the fourth kingdom, which is the Antichrist kingdom that will come after that eventually. So it's very important to watch. I appreciate you listening tonight, and I hope all of this makes sense. You can always email me at chad@faithfulperformance.com. If you have any questions or commentaries or anything like that, you can always email me there. You can always go to our website, faithfulperformance.com. I have a 12-week study of every chapter in sequence, so it takes you through this, but in further detail of each chapter, so to speak, and I go through the text very plainly and thoroughly. So you can always listen to those. And you can always find my book on Amazon.com. All of the proceeds go to charity. All of the proceeds go to charity. So if you want to support that, that would be wonderful. And I really appreciate you listening. And until next time, may the Lord keep his hand upon you and your family. And may you have a great, great week. And we look forward to seeing you next time. God bless. Take care.